Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Happy PGA Championship Week to all who celebrate. It is Wednesday afternoon. All of the pre-tournament press conferences are in the books. Valhalla has dodged a bit of weather over the past couple days, so this PGA Championship should get off to a rousing start on Thursday with sunny skies and warmer temperatures. Rex, how's your PGA week going?
This is my fourth championship that I've covered here at Valhalla, and I got to be honest with you, the place has not been kind to me, other than the Ryder Cup in 08, which was played in September, and if I remember correctly, we had beautiful weather that week. Other than that, it's been a muddy, nasty mess. Go back to 2014 when Rory won here. A lot of weather delays. We almost didn't finish the final round. If you remember, the last two groups essentially had to play as a foursome coming up the fairway on the last hole just to get it done, just to make sure we didn't have a Monday finish. And I actually went back and looked at this. Back in 2004, I covered the senior PGA here. I know that was in a different lifetime ago as a magazine writer. And I can tell you, I was talking with Kerry Haig, England's Kerry Haig, about this the other day. And we were reminiscing about the idea that Floyd's fork overflowed not once, but twice.
Floyd's fork. Good try.
Floyd's. Thanks. Messed it up. I knew that was going to mess with me. Not once, but twice that week. There was multiple tornadoes. It was a Monday finish, and I spent the night before the final round curled up in the basement of my hotel in downtown Louisville next to an elder man in the pajamas named Hale Irwin, who would go on to win that week. So by comparison, the rain we've got the last couple of days hasn't been that bad. The forecast doesn't look great. It looks like Friday's going to be another wet day, but it seems like the golf course is still in pretty good shape.
Yeah, Friday does appear to be the trouble day. 80% chance of showers and storms. Shout out to my buddy Sean, who's making the trip from Nocatee, Florida to Louisville, Kentucky to attend the second round of the PGA Championship, and very likely could get washed out for at least a couple of hours that day. But we were expected to get 2 inches of rain on Tuesday. That didn't happen. We were expected to potentially get a significant more amount on Wednesday. That also did not come to fruition, all things considered, at least in the run-up to this championship. Players have been able to make all of their proper preparations. Speaking, Rex, of proper preparations, that's a great segue to world number one, Scottie Scheffler, who, yes, indeed, is playing in the year's second major. Was a bit of an open question after he did not disclose whether or not he and wife Meredith actually had their baby. They did last Wednesday. Congratulations to the Scheffler family.
Baby Bennett.
Name Bennett. However, Rex, Sky said it has not really affected his pre-major preparation. Maybe he wouldn't have gone 3 weeks in between starts leading into a major championship, but he still was able to play and practice back home in Dallas, playing money games with some of his buddies. What do you think? How much of a hindrance or obstacle or distraction do you believe this monumental life event will have on the world number one player this week?
You wanted to make a big deal about this on Sunday night, and I think I called you out on it because you seemed to get lost in the moment and you immediately wanted to go to, well, no, Rory might be the favorite, might, could be. And you were dancing around with it, and I go, you're really being a prisoner of the moment here. If you're going to base this on the idea that Rory had a really, really good week in Charlotte, don't want to take anything away from him. He won the PGA Championship the last time he was here. Like, by all accounts, he should be among the top three favorites this week. But Scottie Scheffler is still by far in a category by himself. It doesn't matter that he probably hadn't gotten much sleep before he arrived here. It doesn't matter that, as you pointed out, it is a major life adjustment. Scottie Scheffler, probably more so than any other player on the PGA Tour, has the ability to navigate this one better than anyone, just because of he doesn't seem to get caught up in a lot of the other stuff that other players do. If they don't have the absolutely perfect warm-up, if they don't have the perfect prep week, then they're going to let it impact their play. I don't think Scottie's going to do that. You actually went out to the range, I believe it was on Monday, and watched him for a little while, and I snarkily asked you, how's he hitting it? And you didn't even look at me. You shook your head and said, on a rope. Didn't miss a shot. So no, I don't think it's going to have any impact at all.
He had a beard, he had a baby, and he most certainly had the ball still on a string. When you look at the case for Scottie Scheffler this week at the PGA, Rex, like from a physical standpoint, from a technical standpoint, from a course fit standpoint, it's very good for Scottie. we can get into this golf course if you really wanted to. I would probably steer you guys in other directions if you want a full course breakdown. There are a lot of 475 to 500 yard par fours on this golf course. It is paramount to put the ball not just in play, but also well down the fairway, 300, 325 yards. And then you're going to be relying on a lot of mid iron play. Well, as I laid out on live from on Tuesday, who is the best driver of the golf ball on the PGA Tour? That is Scottie Scheffler statistically. He is the leader in strokes gained off the tee. Okay. Well, once you're in the fairway, who is the best mid iron player on the PGA Tour? Statistically, that player is Scottie Scheffler. Okay. Well, with the general difficulty of the golf course, this is still a major championship setup. If you do miss greens, who's top five in scrambling on the PGA Tour? That's Scottie Scheffler. He is thriving, if not the best, one of the best in every major statistical category that's going to be of paramount importance at this PGA Championship. The reason why I bring up, Rex, the week that has been for Scottie Scheffler is that I do think this week presents a different mental challenge than he has ever had in his entire career to this point. And you look back over the past month, like I think the Masters presents a mental challenge because you're dealing with legacy and history and trying to rewrite it. Like, I think that's certainly a challenge and an obstacle that you have to overcome. The following week, when Scottie Scheffler played at the RBC Heritage after his second Masters title, I think that was a different sort of mental challenge where, hey, look, I'm trying to stay motivated. I'm trying to stay hungry throughout the course of a competition. He excelled in that as well. This, I think, is the mental challenge of not getting distracted, where tournament competition has so much idle time, so much time between shots, so much time throughout a five-hour round when you're playing in threesomes for the first two rounds where your mind is going to wander. And it is only natural, he is only human, that your mind would wander to the monumental life event that he and his wife just shared together. What is his son doing? How is his wife doing? I think that is a very real possibility. Again, Scottie Scheffler is immensely gifted in this area where he is, I think, the best player at staying present, staying process oriented, but it's only human, Rex. I mean, there's a reason why paternity leave in the U.S. is 1 to 2 weeks. Like there is a significant adjustment that goes underway. I still believe if you're a fellow competitor in this PGA Championship, there's just a sliver of a possibility that he might not have his very best stuff this week mentally.
Which is fair, but I still go back to if anyone on the PGA Tour can handle a major life change in the middle of a major championship, it's going to be Scottie Scheffler, just because, and this is probably the best anecdote I can give on this, the idea that he is always going to put family first. And that's what he absolutely has done throughout the entirety of his career. And so he's comfortable with the idea that I was there for the birth of the child. I was there for Meredith, my wife. I was able to really enjoy my family for a solid week before I had to get back to work. And he understands he had to get back to work. To that point, his caddy, Ted Scott, is leaving here on Friday, assuming Scotty makes the cut. He hasn't missed a cut in 2 years. So I'm going to go ahead and make that safe assumption. Teddy's going to fly home to Louisiana for his daughter's graduation and not fly back until Sunday's final round. He's going to have a buddy, his caddy, for him on Saturday. And like to hear Scotty tell the story, it was, well, of course Teddy would fly home. This is what we do. Family comes first in this particular situation. So I get what you're saying. I get the idea that, okay, in all that downtime, he could get distracted and start thinking about baby Bennett. But I've never seen anything in his body of work, at least recently, that suggests that he has a problem with his mind wandering, that he has any kind of problem focusing. Like, that doesn't seem to be a problem at all. And this golf course is going to be a lot, to your point. It's going to be a handful. I was actually talking to your point about a golf course breakdown. And again, others will do this better than we will. But I was talking with a player and his stats guy, and the stats guy did a really good job of breaking it down to, you need to do three things really, really well on this golf course. You need to drive the ball over 300 yards. And you mentioned the idea in the fairway. That's not necessarily the case. If you go back and you look statistically back in 2014, Rory McIlroy wasn't even close to the straightest driver in the field, but he was by far the longest. And so there's things on this golf course that if you can drive it 305, 310, you're going to take those completely out of play. That's a huge advantage.
I think with the grass changes though, Rex, it's not
It's also been lengthened quite a bit.
But the grass is so dense. It's not necessarily the length of it. It's the density. And if you're coming in from 200 yards trying to hit a 5 or 6 iron out of there, you're going to really, really struggle. So having a driver that goes 325 is absolutely the recipe for success.
And I would encourage everyone who's going to watch this week, the golf course is in perfect shape. And of all the major championships here, and I didn't realize this until Kerry Hague said it this afternoon during the PGA of America's press conference, that they haven't played, the members haven't played a round on this golf course since last November. Like, think about that. You're a member of a golf club, and normally sort of the MO is, if you have a tour event, you usually stop playing it 2 weeks out, more or less. If you're a member of a golf club and they have a major, you usually start playing it 4 to 6 weeks out. This is months ago they stopped playing, and that's why you're going to end up with this really good golf
course. Probably don't have $400 dues that the members are sacrificing as well.
No, probably not. So there's a huge distance bias for this golf course, as we've seen with the winners here. It's Tiger Woods, it's Rory McIlroy. I think the other half was you need to make 89 feet of putts, and because of that, it's going to be soft. You're going to hit more fairways, you're going to hit more greens, and you're going to have more opportunities. And the third thing is, and if you look at statistically the way it breaks down, if you can play the par threes and even par, you're going to have a really good chance. So you look at those three things, to your point, all three of those things are things Scottie Scheffler does really well. So there is nothing that's happened in the last week, and it was a week ago now, that he and his wife celebrated the birth of baby Bennett, that leads me to think that, oh, somehow he shouldn't be in a category by himself still. I will still put him first, and then we can sit here and have a conversation about who goes right after him, whether that's some combination of Rory and Brooks and John Rahm or whoever else.
Well, I think it's quite obvious that Rory McIlroy is the second leading contender heading into this PGA Championship. We can talk about distractions as it relates to Rory McIlroy as well. I do not want to get into the personal life drama and him filing for divorce on Monday. That feels like very icky territory to wade into. And so we will not on this very podcast. But Rex, it was a very short clipped press conference on Wednesday for Rory. He was a late arrival to the golf course on Tuesday after flying home to Florida following the Wells Fargo Championship victory on Monday. Still got in his practice time. What did you make of his media availability, just having 7 questions? And what did you make of sort of his mindset and mentality as we get ready for the year's second major?
7 questions, 10 minutes. And I know that anyway, people who are going to listen to this are just going to roll their eyes. So I understand from people's perspective, like, what does it matter if we talk to him for 20 minutes or 2 hours or 10 minutes? It does kind of matter because there's a lot going on in golf right now. But I can certainly understand why he decided to cut that so short, given the fact that he didn't want to talk about what happened on Monday with filing for divorce from his wife in South Florida. He didn't want to talk about Jimmy Dunn resigning from the PGA Tour policy board on Monday. He probably didn't particularly want to talk about the politics of the PGA Tour at all. He wants to focus this week because this is an opportunity that he's probably not had in a long time. He understands he's in a really, really good position. You're coming off of back-to-back tour victories. Now, one of them was with a teammate in Zurich, but still, he said he probably drove the ball as well.
He was probably carrying the load on that one.
To be fair, and he said he told our Kira K. Dixon that he drove the ball as well there that he has probably ever in his career, which is saying a lot. And so he understands, like, look, it's been 10 years, and you're going to show up here, and you're going to try to focus. It's probably not great for you and I because we've got to write stories, but I didn't have a problem with him just doing 10 minutes because I understand what's at stake here. I think both of us understand what's at stake here. He probably wants to put the blinders on as best he can and just ride the winning wave that he's on right now, but not try to overthink it, not try to overwork it, not get distracted by all of the things that are going on outside of the ropes and in his life, but focus on what he has the opportunity to do here.
I would agree with that. I don't think he was nearly as feisty this year as he was last year at Oak Hill. If you remember, he was coming off the miscut at the Masters. He just WD'd from RBC Heritage and forfeited the amount of money there. Didn't play particularly well at the Wells Fargo Championship. And then he seemed to be in a little bit of a mood at Oak Hill. That did not strike me at all in his press conference here Wednesday at FL Hala. I'm with you. I think he is showing some sorts of tunnel vision, realizing that this is a point in time that he can absolutely capitalize on. This is the best golf he's played in several months at a major championship venue with which he has success. He's wielding the driver once again as a weapon. And if you look at how he played on Sunday at Quail Hollow, and the level of intimidation I think that he showed in that head-to-head battle with Xander Schauffele. We have not seen Rory kind of showcase that level of bravado, where he was grabbing driver and just absolutely unloading it. 350 yards, 190 ball speed. He's walking ahead of Xander. He's making sure that Xander is well aware of exactly what's happening, and just absolutely blitzed him. 8 under over an 8-hole span. I realize that a decade is a long time to be removed from a major championship victory. But if you look back to Valhalla and the way that he played, he had that saunter, he had that strut, he had that stride where you know that Rory's feeling himself. And I think there was a level of intimidation there. A lot of life has happened in the intervening decade. But if he can tap into those kind of swaggering feelings once again, I think he's immensely dangerous, because he is such a prolific driver of the golf ball that, especially on this golf course, I mean, he just has such a monumental advantage compared to some of his peers.
And I said it Sunday when you and I talked about the victory, like, I'm here for all of it. Rory McIlroy, when he's driving the ball like that, is as entertaining as I find golf to be, because he's not hitting driver because he has to. He's hitting driver because he wants to, because he can. I'm going to go out there and show you that this club, which scares so many people, just not amateurs, but professionals as well, I'm going to show you that I can beat you with this one club, essentially, is what he's doing. So, yes, I'm here for all of that. And to the point that we were just talking about, I'm not quite sure he's had a better opportunity to win a major in the last decade that he has right now, based on just current form. Back-to-back victories, the way he did it last week at Quail Hollow, you're right, he has the swagger back. So, yes, I get the idea you're going to try to put up walls around you as best as you possibly can. And it's not easy in this environment, but he's going to do it. I do want to, and I waited long enough, I think it's fair enough so we don't get in trouble on this one. I do want to deviate a little bit. You have spent the last 2 days on the live from set doing a 2-hour shift. So you don't seem to be talked out. How are you feeling? Do you feel like you told me yesterday that it was, I think, invigorating is what you told me. Yeah. It keeps you on your toes because you don't know where everything's going. How was it?
It was invigorating. It was exhilarating. It was a nonstop adrenaline rush. A peek behind the curtain. When you and I do golf today, and we're co-hosting that in Connecticut, there is a very distinct rundown that we have 2 or 3 hours before the show. We know exactly what's going to happen. We know the interview questions we're going to be asking guests. It's all very timed out. You know, you have 7 minutes for a segment. You may, you know, kind of deviate some of the topics, but the time constraints are basically what they are. Live from the PGA Championship is not that at all. There is technically a rundown, but it almost does not follow it to a T. And so you have to be prepared for anything. I found that to be an immense challenge, a lot of fun, unlike anything I've ever done in my career. I certainly miss Rex, and I think the fans most likely miss. Where was the Rex and Laugh segment? I mean, they kick it down to us to kill 7 or 8 minutes. It allows Aaron Oberholzer, Paige McKenzie to go get a snack, go to the restroom, make some phone calls. I feel like the people are clamoring for. I didn't necessarily get any messages asking where the Rex and Lev segments were, but I could feel the pain from the golf audience nonetheless.
Sure. And we'll be, you and I both will be dancing at night. We're both on live from tonight, and we'll be on the rest of the week. So we'll be around, but you're right. I missed our early live from song and dance. We have some carte blanche. We don't have to have adult supervision. We don't have Steve Sands sitting between us to make sure we don't make any mistakes. So I did miss it. I thought you did a really good job. I mean, that is a challenge because, as you pointed out, it's kind of coming at you fast. And when you have a show like that where you're going to switch, and probably I was watching a little bit this morning, the second you go to that rain shot, that to me, and I did this 2 weeks ago when I was in Dallas, when Sunday I pretty much was on the hour-long pregame show, and because of the timing, they moved up the tee times. It was essentially just a live show from the range. And you don't know, wherever the cameraman pans, that's where you're going to talk. And if you think that's easy, then it probably is to a certain degree, because you're going to go to someone who's leading, and you probably have something in the notebook on that. However, doing it on a Tuesday or Wednesday of the PGA Championship week, you could land on anyone on that range. And suddenly you need to talk about the club pro from Wisconsin, Lavner, go. And nothing is more terrifying than that.
156-man field. I mean, we got lucky today. There was a Patrick Cantlay, but I mean, you're essentially just saying 4 or 5 minutes for just sitting on Patrick Cantlay and just talk and see where the conversation takes you. On Tuesday, it was Sam Burns. We're kind of scurrying to our laptop, see exactly how he's played over the past couple of months. Look at his major championship record. Go into, you know, kind of the Scottie Scheffler parallel with his wife, Sam Burns' wife, also having a child. But yes, not to talk too much about ourselves here, but it was certainly a lot of fun to do that. And potentially, if I did not get voted off the island, I would do that again for the U.S. Open. One of the biggest storylines we talked ad nauseum over the past couple of days, Rex, was sort of the big three, I would say, for this PGA Championship, which is Scotty, which is Rory, and a player we have not touched on with Brooks Koepka. All three of those players are coming into the year's second major off a victory. Brooks Koepka, of course, won LIV Singapore a couple of weeks ago heading into the here. Do you think we are on a collision course at this golf course, a golf course that has produced frenetic finishes and great champions in the past, for another sort of collision course again with the game's top players?
I think so, because the recipe is there and you'd like to hope for it. I mean, you always want to hope for the best. Like the leaderboard, if the leaderboard on Sunday looks like that, where you have Scotty and Rory and Brooks and throw John Rahm in there and Xander and Wyndham Clark and whoever else, you know, whatever combination of players, I think that's a best case scenario. Just not for you and I who talk and write about golf, but I think for the fans. And I think we saw that when you look at the ratings going back to last Sunday at Quail Hollow. People like to see the top players going head to head. This golf course has largely delivered that. When you look at the winners here, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, the U.S. team in 2008 during the Ryder Cup. So I would, there's a high degree of confidence that that's going to happen. Now, and I was taken by the idea that you're really quick to put Rory into that second spot. And I'm not necessarily debating with you on that one, but I think the third spot is probably where you and I are going to diverge, because I would actually put Locke Brooks into that third spot for no other reason. And you're right, the Singapore victory stood out to me. I think I mentioned this. That felt a lot like his victory last year in Orlando, right before the Masters, where nothing seemed to be moving right. He seemed to be a little bit indifferent, and he did flip that magical switch that we've talked about, where he arrives at the major championships and he's just a different player. Between that and the way he sounded today, because he could not have sounded more like indifferent Brooks today than he was. If he would have come out and been bubbly and funny, then I'd have been like, yep, that's not right. That doesn't feel right, but that wasn't him. It was very dismissive of almost every question. It was very, bro, have you ever played in a major championship? It was very frat boy-like, but that's Brooks when he's at his best.
That was the exact takeaway that I had after his press conference. I think it's been a lot of fun to see the tone shift over the past 13 months for Brooks Koepka. If you think back to spring 2023, you know, Brooks was coming off the move to LIV, which was, I think, spurred in large part because of the uncertainty surrounding his health. He had a very serious knee injury. He had the hip injury. He'd finally gotten right. But I think there was a lot of gratitude. There was a lot of appreciation about the journey that he's been on and a lot of the people who helped him get back to a spot where he could compete for major championships. Well, that sort of attitude of gratitude shifted on that Masters Sunday in 2023. He shot 75 in the final round and got lapped by John Rahm. He'd sort of let his guard down. He sort of played defensively. He said that he was playing not to lose as opposed to trying to win. And Brooks, both that Sunday at Augusta and leading into the PGA Championship last year at Oak Hill, vowed to never have that happen once again. And he didn't. He held off a very strong leaderboard, beat Victor Hovland head-to-head to win his fifth major championship. Ever since then, he's kind of gotten back into that Terminator mode, the stoic mode, the tough talk Brooks, where he's talking about punishing workouts and punishing himself for what he deems to be poor or embarrassing performances, like he had the T45 at this year's Masters. He is the alpha of all alphas in professional golf, certainly in the major championships. And we have never seen a player who can look so pedestrian at times and then become so potent when it comes to the major championships. Yes, he is incredible in the U.S. Open. His record proves that. But his best major throughout the course of his career is actually at the PGA. There was a phenomenal stat that the research team threw up where he was plus 88 strokes gained tee to green over his last six PGA Championship starts for Brooks Koepka. When you think about why, well, the PGA Championship has become sort of a kinder, gentler version of the U.S. Open. Still a very stiff test, but it promotes great driving of the golf ball, very solid approach play where you have to sort of pick your spots and also play very calculating with the, with his approach shots. And you also have to be tidy around the greens. That is Brooks Koepka's game to a T. He's not typically a player who likes to win shootouts, 14, 15, 16 under par, which I think is probably what we're going to get here for a winning score at Valhalla, just because of the softness of the conditions. But if you're looking at 7 to 11, they really put the screws to this place, that's where he thrives, because he's just built differently to really dig in on those sort of tests.
And look, the winning score last time around, I believe, was 16 under. That's a little bit on the high side. So if you're breaking it down, and we're splitting hairs here when we're talking about the top three or four players coming into this, but he tends not to enjoy those as much as he enjoys those six under or those three under victories. I mean, he likes to grind it out. He likes to be really, really hard, because he knows that's going to separate him from the rest of the pack. And you're right. When you go back to that Masters, the idea that he walked away from that embarrassed and had to apologize to his team that I didn't do what I'm always preaching to you guys that we should all do. And that's be your best every single day. I think it shows a maturity that we don't often see from Brooks, to be quite frank with you. Normally we just get the frat boy platitudes. We get him just sort of trying to put up some sort of defensive mechanism and being as cool as he possibly can be. That wasn't the case after the Masters. And I think that was probably a good learning experience for him. And I would like him on this one. My curiosity would be, though, when you start going down the list, I don't know where to put John Rahm. I mean, he spoke at length yesterday to the media. He seemed to be in good spirits. He seemed like he had a level of confidence in his game that surprised me a little bit. But, man, that's I wouldn't have a clue where to slot him in. Top five, top six, surely, but I can't go beyond that.
Yeah, he's a hard one to gauge, obviously. I mean, the strokes game metrics that LIV Golf has are not as complete as the very deep shot link system.
Careful.
That the PGA Tour it employs. He's still playing B, maybe even B-plus level golf. It's just the game has gotten so deep, and the quality has gotten so high that John Rahm's B game is not quite good enough to win golf tournaments. I would still firmly put him in probably my top six or seven. You know, players who I like more, I would say, than John Rahm this week would be certainly Xander Schauffele, who has proven in major championships that he has the game. He's proven this season.
There it is. I knew that was coming.
That he's in very good form. I wouldn't pick him to win, because I've sworn off picking Xander Schauffele to win because I've just been hurt too many times. But it would be a surprise given the completeness of his game if he were not once again in contention on Sunday. You just kind of wonder if he's going to have that dog in him. I think Colin Morikawa, although this is a very big test, he's a supreme iron player, he's going to have to really put the screws to his 4, 5, 6 irons this week. So I like Colin Morikawa as well. I think Max Homa, I liked what he said on Tuesday in his press conference, how he's learned how to play these major championships, not coming in here trying to be perfect. He likes the fact that he can play his way in and see what his strengths and weaknesses are. Those are all sorts of players who I like this week, and I like his trend in major championships. Ludvig Åberg, big, tall, strong hitter of the golf ball, and Cameron Young and Bryson DeChambeau, just throw out a couple of names as well, who I do think will have a good week. I think the leaderboard is going to be absolutely phenomenal. I think this is a ball striking contest, and the best players tend to be the best ball strikers.
No, I tend to agree. And then look, as long as the weather cooperates, and it looks like it might outside of Friday. Now I'm going to do the sports radio thing, and I'm going to gas bag a little bit here just to give you some room to think about this. But who concerns you the most? And I bring that up only because I was just doing a radio show with our buddy Jason Sobel, and he was asking me kind of about the injury reports that are out there. And you mentioned Ludvig. And he's got a brace on the knee, although he sort of dismissed it and said it wasn't that big a deal. Missed last week's signature event. I would tend to agree with the young 20-something who doesn't seem to have any kryptonite in the world. That, okay, well, for whatever reason, he had some swelling on his knee and felt like he should be prudent and miss. However, when it comes to major championships, you're looking for reasons not to pick players or top players at this point, more so for reasons to pick top players. Because you and I just rifled through five names and talked about, well, yeah, you have to like Rory, you have to like Scotty, you have to like Brooks, you have to like John Rahm. So what I'm doing now is sort of splitting hairs and trying to come up with reasons. That one does concern me. Will Zalatoris, who I wrote about earlier in the week, he's coming off. I'm less concerned with him because it sounds, I talked to his performance coach, Josh Gregory. It sounds more that Will was just being prudent, more than injured, more than anything else. He said he wasn't hurt. But probably if I had to pick someone, it's going to be Jordan. We've talked a lot about the wrist injury, how concerning it is. That would be the one that I would say at the top of my list concerns me the most.
Yeah, Willie Z has typically played major championships better than he has played in regular season starts. However, he did not have his best stuff certainly last week at the Wells Fargo Championship, his first start since Harbortown, as well as you mentioned, the WD at the Nelson, finished 60th, was very poor tee to green, and also struggled on and around those greens as well. Now, traditionally, and even historically this season on the PGA Tour, he has top 10s at the Masters, Riviera, in Bay Hill, all exceedingly difficult tests. He does seem to rise to the occasion, and sort of his putting is, if not improved, at least sort of marginalized by the difficulty of the greens. I still think Will Zalatoris, if he can find some ball striking form over these three preparation days, I think he could once again contend in a major championship. I'm with you on Jordan. He talked very optimistically about his game on Tuesday, how close he feels, how it's been sort of a weird year, how he's driving the ball as well as he ever has. The stats do not bear that out whatsoever. I mean, he's fallen off in every major statistical category. He's making some boneheaded mistakes on the golf course as well, just kind of throwing away shots and then letting those mistakes compound themselves. I think this is his seventh attempt to complete the career Grand Slam, and the narrative around him, the dialogue around him, the pressure surrounding his pursuit of the career Grand Slam, it stands in such stark contrast to how Roy McIlroy feels each and every time he tees it up at Augusta National. I think that's a byproduct of Spieth's current game, but also how his game is just not suited for the current version of the PGA Championship, which are just big, beefy, brawny styles of tests.
Well, and this goes back to the wrist injury, and we talked about it in Dallas because I sort of touched base with him earlier in the week, and the idea that it can pop out, that the ligament can pop out at any time in his wrist, and he doesn't know when it's going to happen. It can happen when he's lifting weights. It can happen when he's getting out of a chair. I can only imagine how concerning that is for a professional golfer not to know if this swing, if this backswing is going to be the one where it pops out and I'm going to struggle the rest of the day. Now, at the time in Dallas, he told me that I need to fight through that and put that out of my mind and just be aggressive and try to swing the way I know that I can. It's easy to say that. I can't imagine how difficult that could possibly be. It's funny you mentioned the career Grand Slam. I was in that press conference the other day when he was asked about it. And for the life of me, I was blown away because it didn't even dawn on me that that should be any part of the narrative, only because, to your point, this is not the one, especially injured, that I would expect him to win. Now, I'm not saying he never does it, because he's certainly a talented player and he has plenty of opportunities, but it wasn't on my radar this year with everything else that's going on around him. So that was a little surprising when someone even asked him about it.
Rex, who is your winner of this PGA Championship and at what number?
I'm going to go with Scotty because that seems like the obvious choice. So I'm just going to go straight chalk just to make it easy. And again, it's going to be double digits. I feel like with the rain we're supposed to get on Friday, as good as these players are, as long as there's no big delays and it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of wind, something around 16 under, again, is probably the number I'd go with.
Well, this is going to be very anticlimactic because I'm going to go with Scottie Scheffler as well. I'll go a little bit
We might
lower.
Have spent some time going back and forth before we actually started the pod, deciding, okay, who are you picking? Maybe some pre-production is a good thing. I'm just saying.
Yeah. 14 under par is my winning score. I do think on the days that are not going to be hampered by rain, which again, the days are expecting rain are Friday and a little bit of a chance on Saturday, I think they can kind of tweak the setup a little bit on Thursday and Sunday to ensure that it's not necessarily a pushover. Again, Kerry Haig does a phenomenal job of setting up these PGA championships. No player is ever kvetching about the setup, saying it's unfair, saying it's a shootout, saying it's way too difficult. Like, he always seems to strike the perfect balance. I think it is going to be a phenomenal week here at Valhalla with the best players in the world trending in the right direction. You think about the narrative, Rex, a couple months ago, right, on the PGA Tour. Think about the Florida swing. Like, where's all the great players? Why aren't the stars winning? And we still don't have a Xander victory. We still don't have a Victor Hovland victory. We still don't have a Justin Thomas or a Jordan Spieth victory this year. But a Scotty, a Rory, a Brooks, all in incredibly good form heading into the year's second major. It feels like we're set up for a doozy here.
Yeah, and the Englishman, Kerry Haig, you know very, very well. He, a player told me this morning, that the way he sets up the venues feel like PGA Tour venues plus, where it's fair, giving you a lot. And Rory kind of touched on this during his press conference. You talk about how important it is to hit fairways, but he pointed out it's got big corridors. Like, you don't want to be in the rough, because you pointed out it is really, really juicy. However, you've got some room, a lot like you had last week at Quail Hollow. So there is a premium on ball striking. There's a premium on playing well. However, I think you get to see the best players in the world do what they do best. Whereas maybe sometime in the past, and this is not recent past, but in the past, the U.S. Open has gone over the top, where you're just not getting the best performance out of the best players, because all they're doing is hacking out when they hit into the rough. So I like this combination better.
That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex and I will both be on live from the PGA Championship on Wednesday night. Rex for a notes segment with T-Lou, myself to have a 7-second lead in to my Eric Van Rooyen piece and a tag on the back end. But you can catch Rex each and every night on live from the PGA. Of course, you guys know the drill, nbcsports.com/golf for the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will be back each and every tournament round as well in the PGA to give our thoughts in what should be, hopefully, fingers crossed, a 15 to 20 minute podcast each night, Wi-Fi strength permitting. But as always, thank you for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in 24 hours or so after the first round of the PGA Championship.